Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we follow up with Crow 777, who has been filming the moon, the sun, chemplanes, and UFOs, and posting videos with analysis to YouTube. He's been challenging the basic beliefs and science that most of us have learned about the moon, its mass, and distance from the Earth. In our last interview, we talked about the lunar wave anomaly, and how it's been filmed by many people in different parts of the country and the world during the summer solstice and the spring and fall equinox. Well, listeners, it happened again during the 2015 fall equinox, and it was caught on film. The lunar wave anomaly appears as a wavy horizontal line that runs from the bottom to the top on the face of the moon. It takes a few seconds to travel across the moon, and there's usually a second one behind it. It's still not certain what this is. There's a lot of speculation, but gathering empirical evidence and stacking up the data collected by independent researchers is part of the process that might lead to real answers. We also continue the discussion about the massive spraying of our atmosphere by private and military tanker jets, dumping a mix of chemicals, some of which is now believed to be coal fly ash that's obscuring many astronomical events. Crow 777 joins us again from California. Crow, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we talked about the lunar wave in our last interview, and that according to your observations, the lunar wave would happen again September of 2015. If you could please remind listeners what the lunar wave is and tell them about the recently recorded footage.
Okay, so basically, just from an observational standpoint, what the lunar wave looks like to the average person is, if you can remember back to when we still had like VHS tapes and you sometimes see a refreshed scan line, that's the closest, best description I can give. But the wave goes over the moon, and in the earliest footage, which is the best we have from 2012 and in a subsequent filming, I can demonstrate that the wave did not cross the video frame so that it was centered on the moon. I guess the news that you're asking me about was, as we went into this kind of equinox eclipse time, I had made a prediction that from the 20th of September 2015 through the 30th, we'd have our best opportunity to try to film again. We still have a night or two left in that. And a guy named Richard 205 Maria, that's a YouTube handle, managed to film it on the first night of the prediction on the 20th. So I stuck my neck out, and luckily he's actually caught it, I believe, four or five times now. So I've caught it six times. He's almost up to where I am. My wife's been ribbing me, saying, "You're going to let this guy beat you out." It's not an easy thing to catch. It takes endless hours of staring at the moon because we really don't have a solid way to predict, you know, down to a night or a week. So that's why my prediction went from the 20th of the 30th to the 30th of this month.
What does that tell us empirically at this point?
Well, it's, you know, to be completely forthright, it has been filmed a couple times near the summer solstice, but mostly it has been filmed the most around the spring equinox. Right out of the gate, I had decided that I had figured a few things out about the wave. One of the things I was saying is that you're likely to get good wave captures near an equinox, which would place that in March of a year or September of a year. We have two equinoxes each year. What I further had come to understand was that it would likely be near a full moon. There was Russian research that I saw where he kind of was the only other person I saw talking about the moon being a facade, and he said in the third phase of the moon up to 2012, which was interesting because that was the first time that I captured it. He died in 2011. So I guess you're asking me how we know how to predict it. What I've basically done is taken everything I've come to think is correct about it in conjunction with all the footage that we have to date, which I know I'm going to get this number wrong. I just came back from a road trip, but we're above 10 captures. We're in the neighborhood of between 12 and 16, but I just don't remember, to be honest with you.
Yes, and I'm sure your YouTube viewers are going to correct you on that. You have a really interesting following, great group of people that are very interested in your work, Crow, on YouTube. It's really cool. When the lunar wave occurs at these solstice points and equinox points, what does that imply as far as what you've learned so far?
Okay, so if we want to talk about equinoxes and solstices, this is what I can say. I spend so much of my time kind of trying to demonstrate that almost everything that we see has been misdescribed to us. And so when we want to think of the solar system as the model we've been handed, I don't accept that. Now, to pull this back to equinoxes and solstices, this is what I can tell you. If you go look at any really kind of archaic older maps, maybe in the age of sea voyages, you will notice that every single one of them always has the Tropic of Cancer and Capricorn, the path of the sun, the zodiac laid in, and very prominently, the equinoxes. These were very important times in a time before ours. The problem is we don't know exactly why this is, but we see it echoed over and over and over in almost anything historical we can get our hands on. The truth is that we have had our calendars jacked up so badly that we don't even know what day it is today. And this sets aside the fact that we have so many human beings on this planet that have no clue how or when we got here. But the calendar kind of disruption, I think, underscores that something very important about these times was hidden. And the truth is a solstice or an equinox is where the divisions of our seasons come from. That's all there is to it. And so when you hear in the news this is the first day of fall, what they're actually saying is, guess what? The fall equinox, the autumnal equinox just occurred. But they don't say that. They kind of have pulled us away. And to reflect that back to the calendar, what you've got to realize is, you know, Julius Caesar and Pope Gregory and all these people who had a hand in screwing up our calendar pulled the first of the year to January, when in fact it needs to be at the vernal equinox, which is in March. And the truth is that we can see remnants of an accurate calendar even in the naming of the months. As an example, October should be the eighth month. Dec or Deca, December, you know, that should be the 10th month. So what you see is remnants of why these times of year were so important, and I'm sorry I can't come closer than that.
If I can get finer on this particular question, if the lunar wave is occurring based on the current empirical evidence on these equinoxes, do you think it's connected with the equinox planetary mechanics?
You see, I don't accept the planetary mechanics, and I have spent a lot of time saying that the moon is not a rock in space. I think basically what you're seeing is a flaw in the facade or some kind of a reset, or, you know, in the Russian research it says there's a download occurring. I have no way to know for sure what any of that is, but when you look at something you're told is a rock in space, you sure as heck don't see, you know, expect to see a refresh line go across it. And so I'm not sure if I answered you directly there.
I was just curious if you had come up with a hypothesis on your own. What's the relationship between the equinox and the solstice and the lunar wave?
You know, the best I can do at this point is say that it seems empirically demonstrable that these waves occur the most at equinoxes. The ones that we don't have at equinoxes are very close to the summer solstice, not the winter solstice yet. That's about what we know, other than it seems to happen after the moon is up to or beyond half phase, and there is, you know, the Russian research that claims third phase. So that's about what we have right now. And I kind of set aside all the things that I have come to believe are true simply because you get an observational experience, and I have looked at the moon for so many thousands of hours. You begin to understand things that are not easily transmitted to others. So there it is.
Well, I might add that maybe some of the people that are viewing your channel have a related hypothesis. Moving on to the recent eclipse, were you able to film the supermoon and the eclipse?
Yeah, so what happened, that was the day before yesterday for us. Mm-hmm. On the West Coast, the moon was going to be rising as it was approaching totality. Now, we'd gone a number of days without any chemtrails, but the morning of the eclipse, chemplanes flew all over the place, and there was kind of that shiny look that those of us who understand are familiar with. As the moon rose, it was already well into headed towards totality, and when you shoot anything with a telescope near the horizon, the focus is bad. You're looking through so much atmosphere and all the junk and heat of, you know, radiation, all these kinds of things. But to top it off, there was a chem haze on the horizon. The short answer is yes, I did film it. I did film it up till totality and past. And I can tell you, eclipses are not what we have been told they are. That's where I stand firmly. The moon is not what you have been told it is. And each time I watch one of these, and I'll use as an example the previous eclipse, we were told that there was this big tetrad. They used the ghoulish term blood moon, which is ridiculous on the face of it, because you cannot, by their own rules, you cannot predict the color of a eclipse, though I don't think that's what's making eclipse. They're claiming the sunsets and sunrises account for the color. Since you can't predict those things, you can't predict whether an eclipse will be red or not. But on the last one, the big claim was there was this tetrad where we'd have four full total eclipses in a row. They attached the term blood moon to do their ghoulish kind of occult stuff they do. Truth is I filmed the last one, and it was not a total eclipse. And that breaks the tetrad on the face of it. And then the articles that came out immediately after said things like scientists should be embarrassed because they didn't predict the simplest of predictions. And the truth is all the articles tried to cover for it, trying to say we may never know whether it was full or not. And I beg to differ. I know damn well, and I've got the footage posted on my channel that demonstrates that a full eclipse did not occur last time around.
Hmm. For listeners right now, can you describe a little more in detail what constitutes a full or partial eclipse, specifically this one in March?
Yeah, so basically what you're being told is happening is the shadow of the Earth is going to completely cover the disk of the moon. So in other words, you'll see a lit portion, and at some point totality will occur, and there will be no lit portion. I'm here to try to demonstrate that it has nothing to do with the shadow of the Earth or anything else, that it's a staged event. Something else is at play, and that's what we're talking about. And in the last one, I filmed all the way up till totality and, you know, a lip of the moon, which is admitted. If you go back and look at articles, you can see kind of the underhanded admission that it didn't happen, and then the obscurative language where they turn around and say, but we may never know, and by the way, cameras won't help. So that's basically what we're talking about.
What are your thoughts here on those smaller-scale demonstrations that have a globe, the sun within scale, a distance away, and then the moon positioned, where an eclipse would seemingly occur on a smaller scale? Is that completely wrong?
Yeah, in my view it is, and I think the last eclipse kind of proves that. Here they made this big prediction for four total eclipses, which is supposed to be among the most simple kind of calculations you can make in astronomy, and they were wrong, flat out wrong. So if they're sitting here with a model telling us, look, our solar system is a big clock, either that hand is going to hit midnight or it's not, and it didn't. So how in the heck can we accept that, you know, here's this clock out there that we call the solar system, and we can predict all these things because a clock does what a clock does. It goes in a circle, and it hits these points in a predictable fashion, and yet there's that eclipse that didn't go total. They got it wrong. How can that be? I mean, that's one small demonstration of the endless line of things that force me to continually say the model of our solar system we've been handed is complete hokum.
What about this recent supermoon eclipse that happened? Were there any anomalies that you had filmed in this one?
So I'm still reviewing. I had two cameras on it. I had a full spectrum camera, both DSLRs and a visual spectrum camera. Because of the rise and how close it was to the horizon, the visual spectrum didn't help out until an hour or more in. But I'm still reviewing the film, and what I noticed was that the lower limb of the moon was always brighter. And again, I have to complete the review, but while it may have been total eclipse by definition, it appears at this point to me like there was never a time when the lower limb of the moon was as dark as the rest. And the thing is my full spectrum camera allowed me to see the blackened out portion of the moon. So I could easily see any portion of the moon at any time and then compare it to the visual spectrum where you're basically seeing what looks like a crescent with a blacked out area where the supposed eclipse is occurring.
I had a just a regular camcorder and a 3X lens. It was very difficult to find the right setting to get a good image of it without a complete blacked out area.
That's right.
Or the area that was light was too bright to see any detail.
What you're pointing out is another problem. I've got a clip up that talks about just this thing. A number of eclipses ago, what we began to realize was that right before the eclipse is coming, and I hate to use this term, but I'll use it, UFO activity, in other words, objects we can't identify as satellites or anything else, picked up. As a matter of fact, the eclipse I'm referring to, which, I can't remember, it was back in 2014, I believe, there were hundreds of objects transiting. There was another individual who was shooting the same night, a state away, who saw exactly what I saw. But this is what the vexing kind of situation that brought me to the point where I would say out loud, these eclipses are not what you think. With our eyes, with binoculars, and with a camera that would take a very, very fast exposure, we could see color. I did it. And, you know, it was this rusty kind of reddish orange that we expect. Through the telescope, no matter what I did, there was no color. And you got to bear in mind, the way that I'm shooting, I'm taking a DSLR camera and basically using the telescope as a telephoto lens, kind of. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm just collecting a heck of a lot more light. Now, when I took my camera off the scope and put a regular lens on it and took a very fast exposure, I could get some color. When I clicked over to video, no color. Anything else I shoot in the world, whether it's a sunset, a cloud, a bird, a butterfly, I look at it, I see color, I take an image, I see that color. Of course, on these eclipses, that's not what we find. And you just kind of explained in your own personal experience how difficult it was to find any camera setting that would work for you to get a decent image. And I'd be willing to bet that nothing you shot gave you any color.
I have a Canon HF G30. It's a newer camera. I do like it. It's a pretty cool camcorder. And I put the setting on TV, brought the aperture down to 2000 so I could zoom in and get some of the crater detail. However, like you said, you didn't get the reddish color. I had to put the setting all the way up, open the aperture as high as possible. And then you had the reddish color. I had to zoom out. You had the reddish color. But then you had that whatever slice was left was super bright, no detail. It was overexposed. But you were able to see the color of that reddish color. I'd be interested to see the full spectrum detail that you caught.
It's coming. And by the way, did you catch color with just stills, or did you manage to get color into video?
I managed color and video. I think somebody near me took stills with my other camera. But to just add to the UFO quotient for a bit, the solar eclipse that happened in Mexico City in 1991, I believe, it was a turning point in ufology because there was a lot of UFO activity during that solar eclipse that was caught on camera. Is it easier to see during an eclipse or something causing more activity? It's a very interesting realm here.
In my estimation, I think it's easily demonstrated because I have footage of the moon nearly year-round since 2012, with few exceptions. And what we see is objects pick up. Now, I want to be forthright and on the record. I think what we're looking at is terrestrial technology. Now, the question becomes, what are they doing? What are they? Well, these are not really directly answerable as of yet, but it seems to me that when we have an event that I am demonstrating as a manipulated event, and these things showed up all the time, this last eclipse, I have two objects to post. Richard 205 Maria just posted objects, and he's 3,000 miles away from me. Other people from Florida demonstrated that they shot similar objects. I think what we're seeing is technology that is either involved in obscuring the reality that's been blocked from us, or they're actively taking part in the kind of hokum that's being presented to us. I don't know which.
Interesting. Well, you have radical views on what we're told about current models of our solar system, the planetary mechanics of the Earth and Moon, and specifically that no spacecraft, manned or unmanned, has left low Earth orbit. I was curious about your take on the recent announcements by NASA of water on Mars.
Well, let's jump in directly. You know, you probably rightly state I have radical views. I don't view that there's anything radical about my views. I'm an individual who, from firsthand observation and many thousands of hours with a telescope of firsthand observation, quickly began to find the descriptions I'd been handed are not correct. Now let's take Mars. So on the 28th, am I right, they did the announcement for water on the 28th of September, having kind of pre-announced a few days prior. So on the 28th, we have this announcement that, oh, Mars has water. Now, on the same month, we've been getting ads for this The Martian kind of movie that's coming out, which will be released, I believe, the following Friday after the announcement. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because anyone who pays attention will quickly find that anything to do with NASA or any other facet of the information systems we have are always about an inch away from Hollywood. What you're seeing is a construct. I mean, anyone listening to this, remember the date today that this was recorded, and go look at Google. Right now, if you open a search engine, which is going to get a few billion eyes today alone, you're going to see a picture of Mars slurping from a glass of water. It's a massive campaign to kind of seed into the consciousness these ideas, and that's what they are. They are nothing more than ideas that they are pushing. There is no factual basis at all to base these things on, and people are going to say, oh my God, there's rovers and there's, you know, the reconnaissance orbiter. And let me point something out. If you go back and open up your mind for critical thinking and look at these objects you're told were there, take the kind of reconnaissance vehicle that completed its mission, its mapping mission, in 2001. So we're told in 2001 that the mapping mission was completed. How in the hell are they just now figuring out that there's water flows? How come they didn't know this back then when they completed mapping the whole surface? It goes on and on and on, and this is one kind of weak example. But if you go back and look at the timelines, look at the things that you're being told, you'll have reason to question them very quickly. And if you go to my channel, you'll quickly understand that I'm claiming no one leaves, no one goes above low Earth orbit, including machines, in my view. And I think I can demonstrate that with rocket launches. You know, a lot of people take issue when I say that nothing leaves low Earth orbit, and I would urge people to take their own kind of abilities, go out and research rocket launches, go look at all the rocket launch footage you can get your hands on, there's a lot of it available, and what you will find is there is no footage of a rocket going all the way. Someone did present me with like a camera supposedly attached to the outside of a rocket, and it's clearly a Hollywood production, but from the standpoint of a ground-based observer or even a professional ground-based observer taking pictures of rockets leaving, we're told, to go to the ISS or other fraudulent destinations, what we see is a rocket leave, arc very hard out over the ocean, and then the footage cuts almost immediately. But in many cases, you can see the rocket level off, and you can see the rocket coming back down. There was a recent launch done in Florida where the news media showed us this typical, very impressive rocket launch, but many people on the ground had witnessed and filmed the rocket launch event, and they thought that something was going on, and they presented their footage, and what you see is what they thought was something being shot or exploding or the launch failure. So what I'm getting at is the footage that the people took from the ground, who just by chance happened to see it, was this leveled off thing coming apart, looking like it exploded, coming down, and what the world was presented with was a whole other picture. But just put my best foot forward, because so many people get upset when I say nothing leaves low Earth orbit, go look at rocket launches, and you will see when people do amazing things, it's filmed in the high-definition world we live in. There is no footage of a rocket going all the way, and there's a ton of it showing that they probably aren't going any further than the ocean.
I think that's a pretty radical view in terms of a mainstream approach to science and space technology and what the space agencies are feeding the mainstream public. Because if you look at it, there's so much money being poured into this, and all these people employed in these agencies, some are in on it and some are not. And it's fascinating to me, the people who are not in on the secret, I suppose. I know we briefly talked about that.
I know what you're about to ask me, and I'll answer it before you even ask me the question. I think they're doing what they think they're supposed to be doing, and that includes the engineer who's designing the next Atlas or Saturn rocket. I think they are truly doing the job they have set out to do. I think the deception comes at the top levels. But, I mean, come on. Are you seriously going to just overlook the fact that on Monday we're told all of a sudden, after all this time, yep, Mars has water, now we're looking for life. We've had things there forever, orbiting since, I think, didn't we land something in the 70s? I mean, I'd have to look, but, and all of a sudden Friday, here comes the movie The Martian. I mean, can't you kind of dig down and observe the media push and then open your browser and see there's Mars slurping water? It's a media construct to reinforce and seed these ideas that have been just seeded out there for our whole lifetime. And in fact, there's really no physical basis for any of it. And you're probably right to say that's a radical mainstream view, because it is. But I would point out that a mainstream view is nothing more than someone who turns on the television and says, yep, that's correct, who opens up a web browser with CNN and looks at something and says, yep, that's correct. That is a society based on regurgitation. There is no original thought, no critical thinking, anywhere to be seen in the mainstream in the way I just described it. And that is the problem. You know about chemtrails. Let's talk about that if you like. We know what's going on, and yet the mainstream doesn't. So how can that be?
I know that's an area that this show has really focused on in the past, I don't know, 6 years now, and even before that, I was doing another show. But, Crow, before we get into the climate engineering and chemtrails in that realm, if you were to look at these announcements by NASA through an occult lens, what would you say about the timing of them proclaiming evidence of water on Mars?
Okay, I'll answer this one very simply and with a question, I guess. What is it about the month of September that brings these major announcements, these kind of paradigm-shifting announcements from September 11, near the fall equinox, to the announcement of water and possibly life on Mars near the fall equinox? This harkens back to when you and I were speaking earlier about why equinoxes and solstices are so important. Clearly, there is an occult connection. There is a whole by-the-numbers approach to the, what I view as false news, and I guess that's as simply as I can put it. Anyone who wants to can go back and look at the month of September and look on either side of the fall equinox and look at just kind of the announcements that are thrown out to the world at this time of year. Why it's done, I can't address that directly, I guess.
You know, to back up a bit about the mindset of not believing the information we're given by various official space agencies, one of the reasons I'm interested in some of your radical assertions is the platform of distrust has been created by the ubiquitous atmospheric aerosol spraying, the flat-out, full-speed-ahead spraying of our skies for the 101 various reasons. In my opinion, that in itself is a betrayal beyond scale. If the worldwide atmospheric spraying is mentioned at all, it's merely in the context as an operation to be used as a last resort. Yet, here we are. It continues aggressively every day. You've been filming the aerosol operations on your end, and we look at it from a variety of angles, such as obscuring astronomical events, but there's a climate engineering aspect as well. Can you comment a little bit on that?
Sure. I mean, this ties into even Mars. I mean, if you look at the announcement of water, they're going to tie it to kind of global warming on a massive scale. I think a big part of obscuring that the aerosol spraying, or what's commonly called chemtrails, is to actually have a pre-built excuse for when they can no longer cover it 100%, and that excuse is global warming, climate change. And I'm, you know, I don't watch the news, but so many people contacted me to say, apparently the Pope was covering climate change in a big way. So here we have the Pope's arrival, climate change is brought up to a global audience. We have the whole Mars thing where, oh, there's water, but by the way, all these oceans and lakes are no longer there because of climate change. And you and I have spent a lot of time looking up and understanding that there is absolutely global aerosol spraying or chemtrailing going on all over. And I don't think you can separate the fact that it appears at this point that the whole global warming kind of topic that was brought up decades ago at this point is going to end up playing into this, where they're going to come up with some malarkey that, oh my God, things got so bad we had to do this, or Lord only knows what it will be. But I don't think there's any separation between what I view as false, the global warming argument, and this kind of weather manipulation on a global scale that we see.
And allowing these aircraft to dump this material in our skies and have it rain out onto the surface of our communities, as you filmed, and specific during your trip across the country, you were blown away by the amount of spraying that was going on out here in the East Coast. And it has been really intense, especially a day before the Pope came here into New York City. During the day he was here, while tens of thousands of people were outside waiting to see the Pope, the spraying was off the charts, just the worst I've every corner of the sky, the worst I've ever seen.
Part of the problem with aerosol spraying, commonly called chemtrails, is that there is always a red herring provided by mainstream, like that's contrails or any number of things that are used to dissuade people. I'm hoping that I will be able to drop one hell of a bomb in the near future as research that I am now aware of that was conducted initially by a very big-time supporter of my channel over all these years has discovered that we can literally demonstrate and show a path of Federal Express, FedEx planes being sold, outfitted for aerosol spraying, and then used to presumably spray the atmosphere. It's being done under the guise of planes that need to be outfitted in this way for oil spills. But in the coming months, I think I'm going to be able to demonstrate that FedEx planes are being bought and sold, as a primary example, retrofitted for aerosol spraying and then put into commission to do just that. And the reason this is interesting, because when I was in Virginia, my jaw dropped at just the massive chemtrail campaign that's going on down there. It never stops. It's around the clock. These folks claim they haven't seen a sunset in over 2.5 years. But when I posted footage from down there, I immediately had all these commenters who are savvy to airplanes saying those are FedEx planes. So this may be a big deal if I can put it all together in a way that matters and then present it out on my YouTube channel.
Yes, it will be. And every bit of evidence that independent investigators provide is critical to add to all this research. Another researcher out there is Dane Wigington. I interviewed the scientist who lives out in San Diego, Dr. J. Marvin Herndon.
I remember that.
Last week, really interesting guy. And basically, he was under attack after he published that scientific paper showing that irrefutable scientific evidence that the chemicals that are in rainwater match the coal fly ash leachate from water up to 95%. Our guest is Crow777. We're following up with him on recent captures of the lunar wave and the supermoon eclipse. We'll be right back after this break. Guest is Crow777, and we're talking about the lunar wave captured on video during the fall equinox.
What they are doing above our heads is it's almost so monstrous that you almost want to excuse people for not understanding, but then at the same time you realize that the mass of people that refuse to take a closer look or accept it in any way are actually just as culpable as the people spraying, because the truth is, nothing is ever going to change about this until we have enough people standing up and saying, what the heck is going on here? But I would add, in my kind of last breath on this topic, the very same person who's helping to provide the research on the FedEx planes emailed me 2 days ago with a picture of a toad she caught in her yards, and this is in the area where the chemtrailing never stops 24/7. It has five legs, and I was just stunned when I saw the image because, of course, all of us are aware frogs are kind of like the bellwether because of their skin absorbing everything in the environment. They can typically tell when an environment's in trouble by looking at the amphibians around town. But, you know, she sent me this image, and I just immediately thought, my God, is it possible that there's any connection between this five-legged frog and the chemtrailing that never stops in her area? And while I know it's a long shot to draw the line there, I just had to mention it.
I'm sure there is, because there's radioactive material in the coal fly ash that's raining out. I think Dr. J. Marvin Herndon really nailed it on this, because the chemicals leach out into the rainwater. And while most people test in labs the rainwater for aluminum and barium and sometimes strontium, while all those elements are in the coal fly ash, there are 50 other things that match the signature of coal fly ash when a full test is done on the water. And then you look at why is coal fly ash being used as something to spray out in the atmosphere, and you look at the problems with sequestering coal fly ash from the coal-fired power plants. They have a problem with getting rid of it. It's up to 140 million tons created a year, and they have to put them in lined ponds. And if they don't, it's going into landfills, and then they're running out of landfill areas and landfill space. So I was just doing some research and looking at some of the companies and organizations that are connected with recycling coal fly ash. And yes, they do have a problem getting rid of it. And I suspect they're running out of options and they're just spraying it over us.
Well, you know, I can't speak directly to that because I haven't been involved directly in collecting samples and that type of thing. But everything you just said, I mean, anyone listening, go do a little investigation on your own and figure out where fluoride comes, the fluoride they put in our water, figure out where that comes from. And I think it has a bearing on what you just said. What we're seeing in our water supplies and our food, now in our air with aerosol spraying, is seemingly what we would consider waste products being distributed. And it's almost beyond belief.
To save money also, I think that's the other aspect of this, because it's very expensive to sequester and recycle. Now, on another topic, I was curious, Crow, what kind of attention have your videos attracted from the mainstream or alternative media?
It's funny. Right before I went in August, I was on the road for pretty much the entire month on an 8,000-mile journey where I filmed and observed. But as I was getting ready to go, I did an offhand clip calling the Pluto mission a fraud. And man, that rang somebody's bell somewhere. It got picked up by Gizmodo, and then the Daily Mail in the UK. Then Newsweek here in the US picked it up. Guy called, wanted to interview me, and while I was on the road, they wanted to run, again, a print version of me calling the Pluto mission a fraud. I've had a lot of attention, but the funny thing is, it just kind of depends on the topic, I guess. The lunar wave is now getting attention at some... in London, one of the main publications there is covering something on the lunar wave. I've forgotten which, whether it's the Daily Mail again or not. But certain topics that I bring up clearly get overwhelming attention. And the Pluto mission, man, they were doing a global blitzkrieg like they're doing on Mars now to push the seed, this idea, into the public consciousness. And when I stepped up and said this is all fraud, there was one hell of a bounce back, to include what I consider NASA shills like Hoagland actually commenting about me, that I am a kind of CIA NASA plant to muddy the waters of information, which I would have paid for a quote like that from Hoagland. But yeah, it's crazy.
Does that say that you may be gaining an influence over some hearts and minds, possibly?
I think there are a large group of people on the planet who have come to the realization that all of us lived most of our lives never having had an original thought, just regurgitating whatever the television or the news or the politicians, anyone told us, and we have come to a point where that's not going to get it anymore, and people will give their critical thinking a fresh workout and they will look, you know, for their own peace of mind and their own kind of edification, they will look with their own eyes, maybe for the first time, and find out, wait a minute, all these things we've been kind of force-fed our whole lives, there's problems with all of it. So the short answer is yes, I see a growing community. The truth is the older of us, and I'm not a young man anymore, we seem to be in the minority, though there are quite a few, but it kind of quickens my heart in a positive manner to see how many young folk out there are now catching on and saying, not so fast. I've got eyes, I've got a brain, I'll take a look at this for myself. So yeah, there does seem to be quite an awakening going on.
There is, and it's heartening, I agree. Well, coming down to earth for a minute, this particular time has been called the, quote, false flag era by notable researchers. And the false flag phenomenon is distinctively used as an ideological weapon to control populations with the fear of a manufactured enemy. The false flag operation is often deployed within democratic systems where the populations have inalienable rights. And these sophisticated propaganda tactics, such as the NORAD drills of 9/11, the 7/7 London bombings, the 2011 Norway shooting, the Aurora shooting, Sandy Hook, the Boston Marathon, usually they have accompanied crisis actors with them and ultimately tries to reshape our society. What is your sense of the effectiveness of these tactics, and then how do you connect it to the broader deception within the military and space programs?
So, I mean, it's effective as hell, isn't it? It shapes every facet of the globe that we see right now, and I would point out those inalienable rights you just mentioned, that's an illusion. It's an illusion that we accept as supposed democratic free Americans. It is an illusion, and that is proved by the fact that we are even talking about false flags. And the truth of it is, it's no different than the Mars thing we were just talking about. There is a blitzkrieg in media done on any given event, and it is seeded. This idea is seeded out into the mass consciousness on this planet. 9/11, Sandy Hook, these are prime examples. People have demonstrated that there's no there. These were invented, executed things that are now accepted by the majority, seemingly the majority of the population, as real events that shaped, you know, the modern life we live in. And I think the scary short answer is they are effective as hell. And I think the longer answer is it is up to people like me, like others on YouTube, to kind of address in any way we can these issues, to point out the fraud that is being perpetrated. And in my view, 90% of all news you see will fall into the false or false flag category, even if they are based on some real event, usually a minor event, that is then ridden with agenda and fear-mongering and fear porn and this type of thing. But it is maybe the biggest problem in the modern age, and for someone to call this the era of the false flag has not only been correct, they've undersold it.
There is an interesting article in the Awakening Times titled Top 40 Pieces of Fakery in Our World Today, and we just named a few of them. Fake news is one of them, fake journalism, fake entertainment, fake corporate PR and advertising, fake medicine, fake scientific research, fake acquired immunity. Fake water was one of them, which is very strange. So that's only 9. Fake choices, fake money, fake economy, fake free markets, fake free trade agreements, fake accounting, fake welfare, fake government, fake republic, fake democracy, fake elections, fake national security, fake defense, fake education, fake laws, fake rights, fake consent, fake morality, fake spirituality, fake clouds, that's geoengineering, chemtrails, fake war on terror, fake lone nut killers, fake boogeyman, fake false flag events. They include the LAX shooting, Santa Barbara shooting of 2014, the Sydney siege in Australia, Malaysian Flight 17, falsely blamed on Russia, Tunisia shooting of 2015, Charleston shooting of 2015, fake crisis actors. Well, the crisis actors are real, just crisis actors, basically. Fake pandemics, fake moon landing is on there, fake history, That's another one. Fake authority, and lastly, fake universe. Look,
That's a hell of a list you just put out, and I would ask, you know, if you understand that any one or two of those have their fake label for a good reason, how in the hell is it that you can't question every other one of them? I mean, you and I in this society are held to a standard. If we show up in court and we lie and we get caught, everything we've said is thrown out, and everything we will say will not be accepted. That is the standard we are held to, and yet you just gave one heck of a list, and I don't think you said one thing that I don't believe with all my heart are total hoaxes. How in the hell can we live in a society where people just do not understand the level of illusion that is going on?
Well, the last sentence in conclusion reads, "Everything is fake, and seeing that helps us return to what is real." What are your thoughts on that sentence?
I've spent years now trying to figure out how I can address in some way that will ever matter. And in some ways, I kind of landed on the moon, where if I could demonstrate to people there's reason to question the veracity of what we've been told about the moon, then everything else would become questionable. It's so vexing. How do you address fraud on the level that we now find ourselves in? You just gave a list, and as I heard each thing, in my mind, it just kind of illustrates a picture that the overall life that we think we're all leading is nothing more than a mindset of illusion that people have chosen to accept. And the reason for this is because as a globe, we've been taught to regurgitate information. You know, even in school, you know, the high marks come for the person who's memorized dates and memorized formulas, and it's, you know, regurgitation. We need to get to a point where the individual again realizes their ability to have original thought, where they again realize that critical thinking can be aimed at anything. Just because a doctor said something doesn't make it the be-all and end-all truth just because he was a doctor. Just because NASA has presented you with information and they claim they've got all these robots on other planets and all this high-tech stuff, there is no reason that the individual should not aim their critical thinking at what they're being presented with, because I will state categorically, every one of the hoaxes you just mentioned will die under the weight of their own details. The problem is the regurgitation of a public will never notice the details.
I noticed you mentioned the word globe, and I caught
my... As I said it, it stuck in my throat.
That caught me last week after we had that interview, and I'm catching these words I'm saying. And then I was thinking of the newsreel and the beginning of those newsreel footages, that footage that you see in movie theaters or used to.
Right. RKO.
Would have the globe spinning. At the beginning of films, you'll see an image of a globe. It's just reinforcing that system. And I agree, it does need to be questioned. And so I'm careful about even writing now across the globe or globalist or globally, because it implies the sphere of the planet, which I'm not dismantling that yet because I'm not certain of it. But I find it interesting that it's embedded in our language. The last thing I want to mention here is in a show a number of years ago on the air, when I was taking phone calls, the show was on in the afternoon in New York City. And one of the things we talked about was, if there was a moon landing, then there would be footprints on the moon. And a flag, essentially. If there's a Hubble telescope in orbit around the Earth, why not point it at the moon and take some close-up shots of the footprints and the flag? Well, about a week and a half later, that story showed up in a newspaper, and they showed the images of footprints in the flag of the moon.
The tipped-over flag, yeah.
But you could Photoshop anything like that.
Well, let me. So this is the way that I remember that going down, and I was actually looking. For the longest time, people kept saying, well, point the Hubble at it and prove it. Well, we can't. The moon's too bright. That went on for a long time. All these technical reasons why the Hubble couldn't be pointed at the moon. They finally relented, and supposedly they took the Hubble, which in my view, is a fake, 100% fraud, and they pointed it at the moon, and they presented these images, and of course, for effect, you could only see the shadows, and the flag was tipped over, of course, after 9/11, flag has to be tipped over, doesn't it? But a very smart man in the Ukraine or Russia or something the next day posted, I can prove this stuff's fake. I was an engineer or an astrophysicist or something like this, and what he did was took the images of Pluto, which is another fraud that's supposed to be way the hell out there, and he did the math to demonstrate that the resolution needed to produce the images of Pluto they showed us proved that what they had done on the moon was a fraud. Not only did they have the resolution, but the images were wholesale faked. And there's another gentleman who is in the Ukraine. I've posted Aulis.com has a site up where he's used stereoscopic method to demonstrate that the Apollo footage you've been handed was done on a soundstage. Using a simple technique like stereoscopic method, he has shown that where we're being told the astronauts are 5 kilometers in front of a mountain range, it's more like 500 feet or 5,000 feet on the soundstage, and he can prove it by simply using stereoscopic, you know, method to blink two images to show the offset and then measure the distance of objects. There it is. It's all fraud. There's just no getting around it. If you take a critical look, you'll find so many problems so quickly, it will change your mind.
Crow 777, what's in store now for you in the coming weeks and months?
So the next big thing on my horizon is I'll be launching a podcast so that I can address in a broader spectrum the things that people are interested in. On so many of the interviews I've done, people have really taken keen interest and, you know, been behind the interviews and want more. So a podcast, I think, will help cover that gap, and I may model it a little bit on the Higher Side Chats podcast that I've been part of so many times, but I won't be interviewing like big names, and that won't be the angle. I really just want to get in and address the issues that I think are critically important.
Although I'd love to hear you and Richard Hoagland talk about some of this stuff, but hey.
I wouldn't, you know what? I know what I just said, but I would not turn down that interview. I don't have a lot of connections. I'm hoping the weight of what I cover will put it where it needs to be.
Excellent. I'm sure it will. So Crow 777, thank you again for being on the show, and I look forward to your work in the future and hopefully our next interview.
All right. Thank you so much, sir, and keep that camera pointed up.
Definitely. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Friday, 3 a.m.
As I look over my shoulder, what do you think I see? Somebody looking over the shoulder at me, and it's strange, so strange, so very strange, so strange. Must be the season of the wind.
Strange.